Paperman meets such interesting people. They know the lowdown, now it can be told. I'll tell you quite reliably off the record about some charming people I have known. For I meet politicians and grafters by the score, killers plain and fancy, it's really quite a bore. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They wallow in corruption, crime, and gore. Ting-a-ling-ling, city death.
The Media Project is a half hour of commentary and analysis, and sometimes even some insight into the media issues of the week. And we hope that we can offer you the best of that once again this week. I'm Rex Smith, editor of the Times Union, with Dr. Alan Shartok, the CEO of Northeast Public Radio.
Hello, hello, hello.
Well, hello, hello yourself. Absolutely. Alan is primed and ready to go. Ira Fussfeld is here, the former publisher of the Daily Freeman of Kingston, New York, and affiliated publication. Sir?
Good day.
Good day. Rosemary Armeo, longtime investigative journalist and professor. Are you doing okay?
I'm doing okay.
So, you know, in the midst of all the political tumult that is the reality of our society these days, we have always, of course, tended to believe that we in the media could be the fair arbiter of facts, those who might bring some civility, some sensibility to whatever is going on. But I wonder if that is even within our capacity at this point, given how sharply divided our news consumers are. Do you think there's even a possibility that we can bring stability at all to a tumultuous society?
Well, when you say we, that's an interesting concept. I know that Fox News is not my favorite. I suspect it's not your favorite either, Rex.
Correct.
And we quite frequently say we as the, you know, sort of protectors of freedom and expression and all the rest of it. And yet, the press can be pretty evenly divided too and can be at least accused of having an agenda in each case. One could say, for example, that the New York Times, I think they've been doing a magnificent job, you know, is firmly in the we got to get rid of this guy camp. Their editorial policy says so. I suggest, and you and I always fight about this, Rex, that their news columns point to that also. But there is a real division in our press.
It's too complicated. You know, it used to be easy. We've sat here for the last X number of years talking about peripherally the role of the press, and we historically have talked about the mainstream media and the press as we have defined it, we meaning those of us in the room who have had some experience with media and journalism. And now every time you turn around, because of the internet largely, there are new publications or what purport to be publications. You've got these things called pink slime that are arising and are purposely making themselves look like legitimate publications but are really partisan publications. So I don't know the answer to the question of what we can do. I suspect is we can just continue to do what we believe is correct and hope that our voice is eventually the one that people will hear over all the others, because there are a lot of bad actors out there.
It's not as if the media is acting in a vacuum, that it is the agent that stirs up or calms. The media reflects what it's covering. And I watched C-SPAN, for example.
As we speak,
yesterday. Today is the day after impeachment. And there is no commentary. There is nobody speaking, really, in the role as a journalist. They're simply turning the cameras on our political system. And there is deep division, undeniably. So how do you calm when that is the situation?
There used to be a time when C-SPAN was praised for just showing the cameras and not having anybody give commentary.
Right.
Do you believe that then? And if you do, do you believe it now? The reason I say that is by turning the cameras on and just letting people watch,
right,
then a lot of these comments that are really lies or are way out of bounds are going unchallenged.
Exactly. There's no corrections. There's no fact-checking. And I've tried it both ways. You know, my favorite way is to watch a little while on MSNBC and then switch to Fox and get the balance and do the thinking on my own. There was an interesting discussion this week. C-SPAN wanted to bring in its own cameras to the House chambers, and Nancy Pelosi refused to do this. The House provides cameras of the debate. The problem with it is that they're trained on the chamber. So if there's upset or a demonstration or somebody, there's violence in the back, there's no way for the news audience to see that, which is exactly, of course, what Pelosi and the House representatives want.
It is really state-controlled media in that regard.
Yes, it is.
You know, something like C-SPAN is what consumers tell us they want. Just show us the facts, ma'am. And it works for somebody like you, Rosemary, who's right. really deeply engaged with the news, and you
yeah,
can do your
I know
own
all
analysis.
The backgrounds yeah. from other research.
But,
right.
And I mean no disrespect to viewers, listeners, readers, but there is really value to having journalists, human beings who are on top of the news all the time, who are studying the background, who can footnote basically what's going on and explain, no, that's not really true.
But one of the problems with that, and I agree with what you just said, is that the talking heads are frequently talking over the news. In other words, you're yeah. in a big discussion. It's like watching a marathon on TV and then the network forgetting to get the picture of the guy crossing the finish line. The one channel that I watched, waiting for Pelosi to gavel to read the announcement of the final vote, and they were talking above her.
Yes.
So there's pluses and minuses to it. And I think we, however, have to put onus on the public. The public has got to be more informed. Public has to be able to think about what they're listening to or hearing and reading. And there's no evidence that a lot of the public is, in fact, doing that.
Well, you know, we see this tremendous division right down the middle in this country. You know, 50% of this country, about 50%, maybe a point less, wants to see the president not only impeached, but thrown out of office. So we know that people like to look at what confirms their views, right? So now you're listening, and all of a sudden you get 3 minutes of a Democrat, and if you're somebody like me, you say, hey, that's very reasonable. And then on comes the Republican comparing Trump to Jesus. And you say, what is that? And I can't listen to that nonsense. So I wonder, now that you've mentioned the public's responsibility, how challenged the public is to listen to all of it, not only that which they agree with.
And I, again, have to point out how brilliant, I hate to use that term in relation to Donald Trump, but how brilliant he is in the use of the media that's available to him. He makes it easy for his followers to just listen to him. I'm going to tell you the whole story. He tweets multitudes of times during the day. He puts a 6-page letter out on the eve of an impeachment vote that is just colorful, and it looks complete, and it feels like this is the real story.
Well,
that's so hard for the media to compete with.
Well, mm-hmm. I couldn't disagree with you more about that. And much of the media has called him out for that letter, that 6-page letter.
But does it do any good? Does it do any good, Alan? I mean, don't people get annoyed by what they would consider to be nitpicking by the media? I think you're right that you've got to call them out and say, look at all these misleading. I mean, I'm holding in front of me the 6-page letter that the president sent to the speaker, and with all the footnotes of journalists saying, no, this is not true, this is exaggerated, false, false, false. But media consumers don't necessarily like that, right? And they turn it off.
Well, it all depends on who we are talking about as consumers. I mean, I was outraged when I read that letter. Of course, I'm a political scientist and I do this program and, you know, we all do that. Nevertheless, I think the American people are pretty smart. And the big question is, because of the media, what's the post-impeachment going to look like? Is it going to be like Watergate, where the Republicans really take it on the chin as a result of this? Or is the division so hard and fast in this country that the media, the representatives of the various sides, will continue to do their thing and very little will change?
That one. That's the one I'm voting for. It's a completely different media landscape now than in the 70s when Watergate was happening. He did not take it on the chin completely for that letter. In fact, Hannity and his cohorts at Fox were calling it an elegant piece of work.
Well, what do you
and
think?
And it's masterful it? Propaganda, Alan. You know propaganda. It was Goebbels quality.
Yeah, and I'm not sure I'm prepared to agree with you, Alan, about the public being smart, because if the public was universally smart, a lot of the material that Fox, among others, talks about would be seen for what it is. I mean, if you look at the New York Times with that letter, they took an entire front page, an entire inside page, reproduced the letter, and then highlighted in yellow various points that were either exaggerated, misleading, or false. It was a tremendous piece of work, unless you are among those who have bought into the New York Times not being fair and not being honest. And so you read it and you say, oh, I don't believe that. I mean, if I could get Trump on his deathbed and give him some sodium pentothal, one of the questions that I would ask him is, did you just trip into the belief and then the espousing of the press can't be trusted? Don't believe what you read or hear. Did somebody tell you to do that, or did you just trip into it? Because that has been the core, that has made him what he is right now. He has convinced people not to believe truth. And I'm hesitant to give him credit for being smart enough to think of that. But it's been terribly effective.
And the result is that Republicans, according to a new poll, are far more likely than Democrats to say that journalists lack ethics. 31% of Republicans say that journalists have very low ethical standards. Only 5% of Democrats, or people who lean Democratic, say that. But Republicans who strongly approve of Donald Trump stand out even more. They are even more likely to say that journalists lack ethical standards.
As the press has struggled to cover the candidacy and the presidency of Donald Trump, they have fed into that belief, and I understand it. When you have the Washington Post, for example, saying, do not vote for this man, he's a unique threat to democracy. If I were a Trump supporter, how would I not see that as biased and unethical to print on the eve? Well, it wasn't on the eve, but just before an election.
An editorial, though, again, and do people make that distinction?
No,
they don't. Yeah, no. People see our editorials. And so is there an argument to be made? I have a number of times had this conversation with people. Is there an argument to be made that newspapers should give up this business of editorializing, that we shouldn't be trying to delineate between opinion and factual-based reporting?
Well, you know, you've always claimed, Rex, and you and I have duked this out a number of times, and I'm sure we'll continue to, that there is very little bleed from the editorials of a newspaper into the news columns of a newspaper. I think not. We disagree about that.
For example, what about on WAMC?
For example,
what about, I mean, is your news coverage influenced by your very strong partisan views, since you're the head of the organization and you're on the air all the time offering your point of view? Does that not affect your news coverage too?
Not a whit.
Okay, there you go.
But of course, because if you would permit me to just finish my
just
sentence,
happy to
so
help.
It would be good before you jumped in trying
just
to defend
trying to
the,
clarify.
Just trying to defend the indefensible, which includes the idea that you, sir, are the editor of the paper. You make the decisions as to whether a person comes over and does something at WAMC or not, because in the end, you're the chief. So one would have to think that since you sit on both the editorial board and are the editor, there has to be some confluence, no?
Well, one could think whatever one wants to think, as we know. But the Times Union is one newspaper, and there are many, although fewer than there used to be. But it's really what the public perception is that is important here. And I think Rosemary's right. The perception is that people believe that they're one and the same. Certainly Donald Trump does.
Well, the position that you mentioned before about whether or not there should be editorials or editorial pages, that's something I recall we discussed in my own shop when I was there and here long before Trump.
Yeah.
Because there was that point in time when the tide started turning and we were getting reports that the public didn't believe or trust us, and that the editorial page was doing just what Alan suggests it's doing, which is bleeding in between the news and the opinion. So that's not a new point of view. My own opinion is the editorial page is an important page in the newspaper. A newspaper's opinion is interesting as one of many voices, and I think it's worth having. Now, sadly, my former newspaper no longer does editorials, but I know when it stopped doing editorials, it wasn't because of anything other than manpower.
Yeah.
It just wasn't enough time.
Or woman power, yeah.
Or woman. Well, it happened to be manpower.
I day. Know, but we have to be careful.
Yes.
The whole idea of a newspaper having influence because of whatever it writes on news or an editorial, that we even have to look at. No one's reading us. We don't have influence because, not that people can't distinguish one page from another, but they're not looking at the paper at all.
Well, wait a second. I think a lot of people are. I'm not using myself as an example because that would be ridiculous, but I'm up in the middle of the night. I'm reading the Times Union. I'm reading the New York Times.
If you were right, Alan, then you wouldn't see newspapers closing and jobs being shed like feathers off of a molting
bird.
Well,
yeah. But there's a difference between newspapers. In other words, what's on paper and the product that they're putting out. Rex has mentioned this a number of times, where digital people are reading like crazy, and it's not being monetized for the newspapers in the way that on paper was.
Yeah, it's not the people. I think you're just, I don't think you meant to say people are not paying attention at all, Rosemary, because TimesUnion.com remains the dominant news website in this region that we're sitting in, the capital
Absolutely.
Region. And it is just the way that we deliver the news digitally. 1,800 newspapers in America have closed since 2004. That is true. 30,000 journalists have lost their jobs. That's true.
Most of those newspapers are weeklies.
Most of the Yeah, yeah, that's right. About six dozen or so dailies.
I would contend that we're in trouble even if you count digital and you look at Pew studies on who's reading. Young people are not reading. They're not reading news. It's not the medium, whether it's paper or online.
True.
It's news.
Now today,
and we have less influence than
today's paper as we speak. Will be the biggest selling daily newspaper of the year.
Because they're getting, I'm going out to buy souvenir copies.
You want the souvenir copies with the headlines, Trump impeached.
Yeah.
Whether or not you like Trump, you want to save it.
Yeah. Well, that's interesting. Don't you think that the way that the newspaper played that headline, whether it's the Times Union or the New York Times, the New York Times an extraordinary headline this morning across the top of the whole paper, it has a great deal to do with the political leanings of the paper?
No, not at all. Not this one.
No, you haven't learned a thing in 25 years. I've been on this show, and you haven't learned a darn thing. I can't believe it.
I think the vehemence of your objections proves my point.
What does Breitbart have on its page today? Any right-leaning publication or online portal is also going to have impeachment, whatever the equivalent of giant headline.
How would you have covered this on the front page? There's no doubt it's the most important story of the day, and a headline is supposed to capture in as few words as possible what happened. Impeached or Trump impeached, there it is.
I think the coverage on WAMC has entirely reflected Alan's point of view and his bias. So there we go. So,
not at all. Will you stop it? Your sense of competitiveness with WAMC is untoward. It really is. Let's face it. We know that public radio is doing real well. There's no reason for a competition between your paper, which is, as all newspapers, has whatever problems it has, and public radio, which just keeps getting better and better with more money and more underwriting and more things like that.
Serving your elite audience.
So will you please cut it out?
Absolutely. Happy to. By the way, just while we're talking about headlines on the day after impeachment, just want to point out a word about our design director, Tom Palmer, who is a professor at UAlbany, who came up with a unique design. The word impeached is a huge headline of what we used to call second coming type. Huge letters as big as it would be if there were a second coming of Jesus, as the term goes. And it is vertically down the center of the page.
Tom wanted to have
this as a symbolic visual statement of the division in America and thought that that would be just an interesting representation of it. And kind of eye-catching, too, to signify the significance of the day for only the third time in American history, there being actually a vote of impeachment. So, just want to pay tribute to a unique design in that wonderful old-fashioned medium print.
And think of all of the people who will be doing PhD thesis on what happened yesterday as we speak. And somebody may pick up a copy of the Times Union and say, I think I see a cross here. Down the bottom, top the bottom, and something across the top, and write a whole thesis on that.
There you go, exegesis. Hey, Alan, have you ever had an experience? We'll just step away from politics for just a moment.
I've had a lot of experiences.
Terry Gross of Fresh Air, which program is carried on WAMC, was doing an interview, and her interviews are all taped before they are aired. She was doing an interview with Adam Driver, the actor. And he got up and walked out in the middle of it, therefore ending the show. Have you ever had that happen to you? Somebody walk out, they didn't like a question or something?
Never, never. I have had a governor who was, I think, mad at me, Andrew Cuomo, and didn't appear on WAMC for 8 years, two terms. And then all of a sudden, he was there, and he was there virtually every week for a long, long time. And then he made a mistake on the air. I think it was a mistake. It may not have been a mistake, but he said the N-word, and he was trying to prove the point that Italian-Americans were discriminated against in the country. Well, he got a lot of criticism for it. I don't know that it was deserved, but he got a lot of criticism for it. And now he hasn't shown up again. So he may not have walked out of the room, but he walked out of the room.
Well, we should explain why the driver allegedly did walk out. Apparently, he's promoting his movie Marriage Story, which, by the way, is excellent. It's on.
It's hard to watch.
It's very hard to watch. Was it Netflix or Amazon?
Netflix.
That's Netflix. And he's quite good. He's really one of the best actors out there. But for some reason, apparently, he didn't want to talk about a scene in the movie.
No, he didn't want to see the clip. That's
he's,
the problem.
He's kind of phobic about that.
Yeah.
He believes it hurts his acting.
It was specifically, though, he's singing in the clip, which is different than what he normally does.
I'm sorry, I'm not following. I don't know what you're talking about. Could you be a little bit more definitive?
They raised in the interview a subject that he did not want to have raised.
Right.
So he walked out. And I'm unclear as to whether there was an agreement before the airs.
I can help with this because I'm the pop culture maven here. So he has this whole phobia. The singing is part of it, but he doesn't like to see any of his clips. He thinks that that will influence his acting because he'll try to correct and he'll hold himself back. So he told this to Terry Gross, who has interviewed him in the past, and her offer was that he could take off his earphones and he wouldn't then hear the clip as it was being shown. She was in one studio. He was in a different location in another studio.
Right.
So when they started doing this, and was no agreement ahead of time, although they were aware of his phobia, he didn't just take off the headphones. He took the headphones and walked out the building. And she's informed later after the clip, hey, he's gone. He's not coming back. And NPR, of course, just put in another Terry Gross interview. It weren't heard at all. But Adam Driver missed out on promoting Marriage Story, promoting his own work. And the publicity has been all in favor of Adam and against Terry Gross, who knew, they say, that he had this problem and set it up. And she should have just been more sensitive and more aware of his problem.
But she didn't promise him beforehand.
No.
Then I don't see the issue from a media standpoint.
Well, the difficulty is, the question that I think is interesting on these situations is how you keep someone talking to you when you're asking them difficult questions.
Yes.
And how you keep how a journalist manages to actually maintain a relationship with a source when you have to, you know, sometimes sting them by reporting.
Well, sometimes you don't. I mean, I tried very hard to ask Andrew Cuomo every tough question I possibly could, and then he stopped coming in. So, I mean, you know, look, the people are going to analyze the situation based on what's good for them, and apparently that's what Cuomo thought he was doing.
Let's go back to Terry Gross. If in fact she was told by Adam Driver's publicist not to do what she did, which is play this clip, or he won't be on the interview, do you say, okay, I'll not play the clip? Or do you say, listen, this is an important piece of the interview?
Or do you say, ha-ha, take off your headphones and think that you've made your point?
Well, there's that.
In this case, I feel like there was a failure to communicate, because if she wanted to use the clip, she could still have done it. She could have added it to the program afterward. His request was, don't show the clip while I'm here. He didn't want to see it. He didn't say, don't play any clips. And it just somehow got all screwed up. And then when she's playing it, he didn't say, don't do this. He didn't give any warning. He didn't yell. It wasn't like Bill Cosby storming out of an interview when he got asked about his sex crimes, as if there were any other reason to interview Bill Cosby. It was he just took it off and quietly went away.
And so, since they are not in the same studio, she usually doesn't interview somebody while they're in the studio with her. Didn't know. The situation, though, oftentimes, I think, as a journalist, you have to take a stand and say, no, I'm not going to cover this if I can't do this. For example, we recently, the Bishop of Albany had a prayer service for sex crime victims.
Saw that.
We initially were told you can't actually come into the service, and we were not going to write about this if we couldn't be there. However, one of the victims did not want us to write about what she was saying. We honored that because we take special care, you know, in the code of ethics, minimize harm. We take special care of sex crime victims. And so if she doesn't want to be a part of this, we will honor that. I think you have to make a human judgment. But we weren't going to write a story about something that we couldn't be in and see and just accept the church's representation of what went on into the service.
And the deals are usually more elaborate than that. The famous one was David Frost interviewing Nixon for the first time after he had been forced to resign. And the deal was, he of course knew that the only reason he was getting paid so much for that interview by Frost was that they wanted to talk about Watergate. But he made a deal that they wouldn't bring it up for the first, I don't know, 3 hours into that. And it was the first question Frost asked. He agreed to it, and then it was the first question he asked, calculating that Nixon would want the money and would want the chance to talk about it, and so he gambled.
So
he broke the deal.
In the case that you raised, Rex, so your newspaper had no coverage at all of this event?
We ended up, they let us in. They let you in. End up letting us
in. They not had let you in, would you have reported that the meeting took place? But that's all we can tell you because we wouldn't cover it under the conditions that they set out.
Correct. Yeah. Yes. Mm-hmm. Sorry, I realize the audio microphone can't see me nodding my head.
Yes. We get the Rex Smith bobblehead though.
Oh, you have a bobblehead too?
Oh, I have two Alan Chartok bobblehead dolls.
Wow, everybody. Yes, absolutely. They're different years, aren't they?
Yes,
different...
I believe one with Murray and one without, if I recall correctly.
Mm-hmm.
Murray was no extra charge.
Well, it's all for the good of journalism. Yeah. By the way, speaking of newspapers going out of business, there's a newspaper in Skagway, Alaska, which is in the southern part of the state, down toward the lower 48, where the owner wants to give it away. He's not making enough money. He says, well, you can probably make $50,000 a year on it if you are the reporter, editor, ad salesperson, and layout person. It's a one-person show.
Wait a minute. Does he want to give away the property or does he want to give away the product?
The whole thing.
Oh, so he's just divesting himself.
Yeah.
I've been looking for a retirement project.
Well, there you go. You may want to run up into Alaska. That's somewhat of the diminishing value. Finally this week, Mediaite, which tracks the news media, lists who the most influential news media people of 2019 are.
Fascinating.
It's a list of the top five.
Where are we on that?
Actually, they're, you know, that's a very good question. I think since they only list the top five, we're probably number six, right? Don't you think? But number five is George Stephanopoulos, ABC News chief anchor. You know, he does Good Morning America, and then he does the Sunday politics show this week. He's got a lot going on there.
They named him, though, for getting Trump to talk about how it was perfectly all right to ask for help from foreign governments.
Yeah, and unlike, he bounces back to Good Morning America, but he seems to stay away from the flow. When they do the Halloween costumes or the cooking segments, he seems to not be part of that.
It still annoys me that him and the same for Nicole Wallace get all this media starlight, and they're not journalists.
No,
they're politicians.
Alan, do you want to say something about that?
Well, yeah. You know, I hear that part of your voice there, Rex. But I think that's right. Stephanopoulos had a real problem, and that was that he had to worry about getting over the fact that he was seen as a politician and not as a journalist.
So look at the supposedly top, the number one most influential journalist in the news media, according to Mediaite. They split it. They took a dodge, and they said it's a tie. It is Sean Hannity and Rachel Maddow. And they conclude saying there is an argument to be made that these aren't just the two most influential members of the media, but two of the most important people in American politics today. Interesting. So anyway,
so
you all think about that.
So much for just laying out the news, right?
Yeah, so much for just laying out the news. Isn't that, that does say something.
Who are Who are two, three, and four?
Well, we'll get to that next week's show, Alan.
Thank you
for joining us this week on The Media Project, folks. We appreciate it. Alan Chartok, Ira Fussfeld, Rosemary Armeo, and I'm Rex Smith. We hope to see you next week on The Media Project.